All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. It's been a while since I've hopped on the podcast, but today we have on an awesome guest, Justin Small. I've been trying to get him on for quite a while now, but his work schedule and my work schedule and the kids and all that good stuff, it's made it pretty challenging, but we finally were able to connect. So anyway, man, how you doing tonight?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, good. Happy to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, bro.
All right. So the main reason I wanted to have Justin on is, well, I guess there's more than one reason, but if any of you guys follow him and his wife on social media, they absolutely knock down all kinds of critters, whether it's elk, deer, wolves, whatever it is. They're always filling tags. And, Justin, as of lately, anyway, the last couple of years, I've seen him knock down some really big bucks. And, yeah, I just want to pick his brain about mule deer and what he does to kind of, you know, find those upper age class animals. And that's what we're going to do.
Let's do it.
All right, man. So let's talk about preseason scouting a little bit. I'm curious for myself, and I'm sure the listeners are too. Do you spend a ton of time, you know, out in the hills in the off season and the, you know, I guess summertime scouting for bucks and stuff like that? Or are you kind of just hitting the trails during hunting season and seeing what you find at that point?
I used to spend a ton of time scouting when I had a little more time. Now it seems like I tend to use archery hunting a lot to kind of gauge, you know, especially in the country that I live in, deer seem to change elevation from year to year. Something I think we both saw this year when we were hunting. I like to go into areas, and especially when the elk hunting's slow in the beginning of the year and I'm looking for new wallows and stuff like that, trying to figure out where the elk are. But a lot of the early morning times, I'll sit back in glass and just try to figure out, you know, this whole area. It seems like if I'm seeing all the does at, just say, for instance, 6,000 feet or whatever, and all the bucks are at, you know, 7,000 feet, I kind of will take that into my brain when I'm going into the first few days of October. Normally, like with my work schedule, I'm not home for, you know, the first 4 or 5 days of the deer season, it seems like. So, you know, I just watch I do things now, like I watch the weather and hunting kind of similar areas year after year. I watch the weather and let a lot of those things dictate where I think the deer are going to be on opening day. And then when I get there and I'm wrong, I think the biggest thing that hunters do is just not adapt. Like most of the deer that I saw this year were in like the bottom of drainages and stuff. I just didn't see a lot of deer that were like super up high. And I don't know if it was based off, it didn't seem like the driest year. Maybe it was a little greener in that same similar area we were in the year before. But it just seemed like they were kind of held up in these little pockets low in the canyon. So I think a lot of the problem is, like, you know, guys that come to Idaho or, you know, anyone that goes to hunt out of state or anything like that gets stuck on being like, I have to get to the highest ridge and the highest peak, and I have to glass from here, and all the deer are going to be, you know, on the top of the mountain. And it's just not, it's not really, it's not real. You know, it's a dream for all of us that we get up there. We kill ourselves hiking to the highest peak and see some 200-inch deer, you know, at the very top of the mountain and shoot it. But I feel like a lot more nowadays, whether it's predators or whatever else, these deer kind of, especially mature bucks, sit in like these little pockets that are really hard to see into, really hard to find, you know. And although you might not think there's deer in there, there's always deer, you know, anywhere you are in Idaho, but you just have to figure out where they are instead of either backing out or, I mean, if you can't find deer, obviously back out. But yeah, I think I've talked about this with you before, but it's just like, you can glass an area all day, but if you're not willing to like drop down the ridge and be like, there's this little, you know, like, I want to look in the bottom of this canyon, or I want to get over to this spot, and it's going to really suck to just check out this other face, And it seems like as I've gotten a little older, I've just been like, I don't think about it as much. I'm like, I'm just going to go down and see if there's something there. And a lot of the times there still isn't, but that's how I feel like lately I've been finding the bigger bucks. It's just like, I'm going to go over, you know, and check out this one spot and see if something's there.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I would say one thing that I kind of thought about on the way home from that trip this year was I do the same thing that you just described. I always feel like I got to hike, you know, to the very top of the highest peak or, you know, closest to the highest peak in that area so I can see as much country as possible. And I always like commit to that. And then it never works out like you think it's going to work out, right? You're not just going to hike into that first high peak and glass up the buck you want to put your tag on. So what I noticed this year when I shot my buck was I was on the highest peak on that ridge, glassing across and all those drainages, and I wasn't seeing any deer. And for whatever reason, I decided to pick up all my gear and I dropped down this finger ridge, like probably 700 vertical feet. And it got me into a different angle and instantly picked up deer that were feeding below me, even from that point that I couldn't see from the top because the top of the trees, I couldn't see a steep enough downward angle to look into that elevation band. So I guess you saying that, you know, makes me reminisce of that moment where if I wouldn't have dropped into that spot, I never would have even seen the deer that were there to begin with. So I've definitely learned that myself, like not overcommitting, not, you know, putting all of your food and all of your gear into like one area, being a little bit more mobile and being willing to move. It definitely seems to help find more animals anyway. In the past, I would like just commit to one area with like all the food for one trip and sit there for however long. And it's just, I don't feel like it's the best way to be effective committing to one spot.
Yeah, nothing is worse than getting like halfway through a 10-day hunt and packing out 5 days worth of food like the same way you came in. And I think,
yeah,
I just think like as hunters, like I know I did it this year. I think we like romanticize stuff to a certain extent, you know, where it's like, you know, me and you have been hunting the same area. That's how we actually met in person, you know. And I was like, I was in there and I went in a few days later with this kid, you know, and I see all these monster bucks and the kid can't shoot very far. And so we end up getting like 100 yards and he still couldn't quite seal the deal, you know. The funny thing is a year later, like that kid killed like 180-inch buck at like 600 yards, you know, like he just, but anyways, I had this thing where I was like, I'm going to go into the same area, you know, find these same bucks in the same spot. And partway through the hunt, like after you guys left, I just had to be like, this isn't working. I need to do something else. Like whatever it was, whether it was, you know, go further on the trail or go into a completely different drainage. And my, you know, my wife thought I was crazy, but my thing to that was just, I'm going to leave. Like, I'm just going to leave this spot and go to a completely different area and just see if I can't find a deer in a different area. Like, I've pounded my boots all over this mountain and I haven't, as much as I wanted to find what I was looking for, I found one buck that I probably would have shot. Like, that buck, I realized after I posted that video to YouTube that I had a little bit better footage of that buck from the night before when I saw him when I was packing out my wolf. And I realized like his front forks weren't like great, but his back forks were, but he was like 28, 29 wide. Like he was a stud deer. Like I would have been totally happy to shoot that buck. But I got home, like I had already decided I was leaving that day. And so I got out, looked at the footage and was like, oh man, that was a nice buck. So I went in there, found the buck, dropped in, and then he just like walked over the ridge for me, you know? And it was like, I was like, he's going to come back because he came over that ridge last night. And it's just like, it never works out the way that you want it to. And that was with like a couple days left of season. I was just like, I can go back in there and try to find this buck that's like a ghost, you know? And he was super smart, or I could just leave. And I got to the point where I was like, I need to stop focusing on how I want this hunt to go down and just focus on this is how it is going. It's going really terrible for me in this area. I've seen one buck in 4 days or 5 days or whatever that I would shoot. I need to get out of here and jump ship and just go to a completely new area. And like the first of four deer that I saw when I got into that area was the buck that I shot this year, which like for me was, you know, I'm not a typical guy. I like non-typical deer. I can never find them. I found a crazy one for my wife one year, or we found a crazy one, but I always shoot typical bucks, it seems like. But that one that I shot this year was like, anyone in their right mind would have shot that buck, you know? I mean, he just had absolutely the biggest forks ever. He was only like 20 inches wide, probably, but just, I mean, he was probably like, I wish I had aged him because he was so old, but he was just a bruiser of a buck. And all that came from just being like, you know what, like, let's flip this table over and go somewhere else and just do something else. Cause this isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you too. I know you have the patience and you pass on like several bucks that most people would shoot in a second, which is, you know, more power to you. I wish I had that willpower myself, something I'm working on definitely. But, when you're e-scouting or when you're picking an area, do you feel like there's certain areas that you find on the maps that you feel like in your gut, like are going to hold mature bucks, or do you feel like you're finding these bucks just like not anywhere, but like, I guess what I'm asking is like, do you think there's upper age class bucks in most of those canyons out there? And it's just a matter of time before they slip up and you find one, or are you more of the belief that there's certain areas that hold them and there's certain areas where they're just not going to be?
I think if you're talking like Idaho as a whole, there's certain areas they're not going to be. There's certain areas that our wolf population has gotten too bad that they're just not there. You're just not going to find that, you know, 160 to 190 class buck in there. I do think a lot of the canyons and trappers and everything are helping out now. Like, one of the things that I look for is like if you were going to hunt in all of Idaho, I can tell you right now, like where me and you are hunting is not the smartest place. Like, one, it's gnarly. Like, your chances of getting on a buck when you see it is not great unless it pops out right in front of you. I saw my buck at like 2000 yards and somehow right when I got to it, it bedded down and I was at like 900 yards. I wasn't going to shoot it from that far. But if it hadn't bedded down right there, I wouldn't have been able to cut the distance because it had moved so far. That's one thing. Yeah, they're going to start slipping up as the rut comes in, but still, that's normally the younger bucks in Idaho. Like, some of our seasons end the 24th, some of them are the 31st. And sometimes, some years, you get some bigger bucks that slip up like that, those last few days of October. But for the most part, you just have to, you're going to be glassing like little pockets where you pick up a deer. And the nice thing about that is a lot of the times those bigger bucks are going to be contained to that little area that they deem as safe. You're going to find them in places that they have everything they need. They're going to have feed, they're going to have water close by, and they're going to have a like rock, you know, a good place to bed down, which the problem with that is a lot of the times they're really hard to get to. That 30 inch buck that I shot maybe 3 years ago or something, I watched that buck for like 4 days or 5 days. I was actually calling in a bull to my brother and I told my brother, go down here, whatever, that bull's going to cross right in front of you. And the bull didn't do what he said. And the bull came like 20 yards from me and was just standing there bugling like right next to me. And I was glassing the hillside on the other side of a tree waiting for my brother to shoot it, but he was way down the hill and picked up that buck. And for 5 days I tried to kill this buck, but it was like I either had to be at like 1200 yards or 60 yards, and there was just no way I was going to creep in on that deer. And so I spent this whole time where I was like wasting all these days, this is like, you know, coming to the end of the season, and I'm like, he's either going to go bed down in this area where I can get a little closer to him and still have a pretty far shot, or he's not going to do it and I'm going to eat my tag this year. And it's really like it, that's, you know, honestly, that's been probably what changed for me, like maybe 5 years ago, where I just was like, you know, unless it's going to be like a story that I'm really proud of, and there's nothing wrong with somebody being proud of shooting a 130 buck. Like there's just, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with that. But something changed a few years ago for me where I was like, I just want to shoot really mature animals. Like it doesn't have to be like, you know, a 200 inch deer for me to shoot it, but something like, if you can see, like not all bucks are going to be 200 inches. Like a lot of bucks make it to 7 years old and they're 150 inch deer. But you can tell that they're old if you get good at looking at them. And things are different. Like with my bow, you know, things are a little less, you know, it's more about the experience with my bow. But when I have a rifle in my hand, I'm like, I'm 100% and I'm deer hunting. I'm like, I'm 100% going to try to take down a really nice buck, or I'm just fine, you know, being out there. And for me this year, the only other day that I saw a really good buck was when I saw that wolf. And like immediately there was, that's the other thing is when it comes to predators for me, there was no question in my mind when I saw that wolf, I was going to go after the wolf instead of the buck. And like, by the time the wolf bedded down and I tried to relocate the buck, it was gone. And it just happened that fast. So for me, I'm like, I just really want to, I don't know the right word, but when it comes down to it, I just want to be able to be like, hey, yeah, I worked really hard for that buck, and like, you know, telling my kids the story and everything someday, like, oh yeah, I mean, I, you know, was prepared to eat my tag and then I finally found this dream buck or whatever, you know? And if you talk to a lot of guys that are way better hunters than me, you see that. You see guys that are like, they'll wait. And then like the last day, a guy that comes to mind is, you know who Matt Tillston is?
Yeah. I had him on the podcast like 15 episodes ago. That guy kills some giant mule deer every year with his bow and with a rifle.
Unreal. He's unreal. Yeah. And I know like several times he's killed something on like the last day. And you see that with Remy Warrens and like all sorts of guys that are just absolute killers. Like they'll just wait. I'm happy not shooting anything, you know? And the second that turned in my head where like growing up, I was super poor and we like had to shoot something, you know? And so it was like the first thing, doe, whatever, when I was younger and you could do that, you know, we would shoot stuff. And then as I got older and now like I'm at the point where we eat wild game, but normally we like have enough that I don't have to, you know, I don't have to kill something. I'm going to eat it either way, but I've just gotten to the point where I'm like, I really want to, you know, take a mature animal every time I can.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's easy for me to sit here now and say that I'm going to turn that leaf in my own book. But I definitely felt myself this year, when I went to like Montana, definitely being more willing to just let several bucks walk before the one I ended up shooting. Like as soon as I saw it, I was amped. That was the most excited I was all season at any animal I shot and harvested. And it was just like, as soon as I put my glass on it and I saw the frame from literally a mile away, like 2,500 yards or whatever it was, and you could just tell that it was like a good buck, I was like instantly just jacked. And like looking back on that moment, this might sound bad, but most of the animals I shoot, I guess I don't get that quite jacked up about. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm happy to harvest them. Don't get me wrong. Like I'm very happy, especially like killing an elk with my bow, like any branch bull, I'm freaking super pumped about. But that deer was like a different feeling. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it didn't score well. Don't get me wrong. It's not like a 180 inch buck, but it was definitely a mature deer, heavy, you know, had the mass. And anyway, it was just, I'm hoping this year in 2025, I can rekindle that thought and be willing to just kind of let stuff walk that I know, like deep down, I probably don't want to put my tag on. You know what I mean?
And I think
just hard though.
like you're saying, I think going into the season and just being like, hey, this is what it is. Like, it sounds simple, but if you go into the season and you're like this year, I was like, hey, I'm not going to shoot anything but a 6-point with my bow. I have an opportunity every year since I started archery hunting to shoot a 300 class bowl with my bow. That's not what I shot, but I was like, I'm going to shoot a 6-point bowl with my bow, or I'm not going to shoot a bowl. Like, I'm just fine eating my tag. And I had multiple opportunities and then finally had like one of the coolest experiences of my life on a bowl that was still a 6-point bowl. It was just smaller than a couple of giants that I almost killed. But that being said, like the first, you know, 4 or 5 days I hunted, I could have killed, you know, 4 or 5 raghorn bulls and 3 or 4 branch bulls, you know, and I just said no, like I, you know, like 20 yards, you know, and it's hard, like when you have a bow in your hand, you just want to let it fly, you know. But I was like,
hell yeah,
I'm gonna do this, like I have a goal, this is what I'm gonna do. And the one of the craziest things that happened to me is I was sitting on a wallow in the middle of the day and this branch bull came in and he was like a 5x5, like pretty nice, you know, and dark horned and everything. And I just had to sit there for like an hour while this bull was on the wallow, like 15 feet away from me. And I could have shot him 100 times. But that night I called in the first time in my life. Well, not the first time in my life I called in a herd bull, but I've called in a couple of herd bulls, but it was always like I got right to him and called. And this one I sucked down with like his 30 cows. And they like all like they just filed in front of me, cow, 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 cow. And finally at the end of all of them was this bull. And I don't know if you read the story or whatever, my bow was broken and I didn't know it. And I shot and the arrow went right underneath him. I mean, perfect left to right, but just right underneath him. And I thought I smoked him, you know, because of the way he ran off and everything. And when I went up, like my arrow was just sitting there clean as could be, like right where his legs were. And I just, but the thing was, if I had shot one of those bulls, I wouldn't have had that experience, you know. And that, I think that's what a lot of it comes down to, is the more experiences that you have, the more confidence you gain, you know. And I can tell you, if when you are ready to turn that page, like success looks different for everyone. And if it's a 130 buck, that's great. But when you do turn that page, you just get more opportunities. Like the more bucks you pass, the easier it gets to pass bucks.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have much experience with passing on very many animals, but I told myself when we went to Montana that I wasn't shooting a deer unless like I knew like right away it was one I wanted to put my tag on, and I stuck true to it. And it wasn't that hard to pass, because it was like I was dead set on it, and I actually like meant what I said that time, that I wasn't doing it. Yeah. And I was letting animals walk that honestly in the past I would have shot like instantly. Yeah. And I didn't regret it. Like I didn't walk away from it like second guessing myself, or you know, what if in it, or wanting to go back there and look for that deer again. I ended up just moving to new areas every day hunting and glassing my butt off and moving and glassing and moving and glassing. And it finally came together. But yeah, I'm really interested to see how this year goes. I'm hoping I can hold strong again. That's for sure. And I still think like, even like for the YouTube stuff that I like to create, if I don't fill my tag, you can still tell an awesome story. If you're seeing animals and you don't shoot one, it's still an awesome story in my opinion. So, it's interesting. Some of the videos I've posted on YouTube that I didn't fill my tag, they did just as good as far as engagement goes as videos where I shot an animal. So, yeah. You know, but one other thing I've noticed too, is like when I hunt around my home in my home state, I don't have a problem passing on blacktail bucks that are not what I'm looking for. It's just like a different vibe when you're out of state and you've never been there before. I struggle telling myself that there are animals of the caliber I want to shoot in the area that I'm hunting, because I've never been in there before. Like I've hunted a new zone almost every year for elk. Deer, I've been kind of lucky getting the same tag, but now this year I don't have that tag. So I'm going to be in a whole new area. I struggle like believing that they are there. You know what I'm saying? So I think I got to get over that. That's probably the biggest hurdle for me out of state is just, you know, believing that I'm going to find what I want to find.
Yeah. I think like going back to what you're saying earlier about like scouting and stuff like that is I spend a lot of time, wolf and bear hunting, you know, I don't think that's any secret. And, one thing about spring bear, if you're hunting the same, if you're hunting an area close to, is you're not going to be able to see like where the deer are, you know, or you're not going to be able to see where they're going to be during the fall, but you can get a good idea of the numbers because they're not hiding. They need to eat, you know, they're out eating like constantly, and same with elk. And another thing, like one thing that I think nobody ever brings up is I see like the majority of the areas that I know hold big bucks. I know that because I was out wolf hunting or something. And I see, you know, however many like nice bucks in one day in the bottom of a canyon. And then for me, it's just hopping on and being like, okay, where would this thing summer? You know, where would I think it would be in the fall? Where is it going to start rutting that pushed it down to here? And a lot of that stuff, you know, you don't want to go out and push deer and elk when they're vulnerable, especially deer, like right after they're done rutting. But that's a great time to find like big bucks if you're out driving roads and stuff like that. Like it's pretty, you know, if you do some glassing in the morning and the evening and stuff, you're going to find some stomper bucks around. And then from there, it's just trying to trace back to where they were. And you're not always going to be right with where you end up, but you know, at some point you'll, I think that's a good way, you know? So if you end up doing a wolf hunt in the winter or whatever, or spring bear and say, hey, you know, in this canyon, there's 100 does. And in the other canyon, there was one doe, you know, well, they might not be there on October 10th or whenever your hunting season starts, but if you can trace back to where they went, then you're, you know, you're going to be golden.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that when I hunted spring bear, I've done, I think 4 spring bear trips now. And, there's this one drainage I've hunted twice and there's been the same group of does in that canyon, like almost the same exact spot both years I've been in there. And it's like a big group of does. And then the other areas I've hunted in that same unit, a drainage over, don't see any deer at all, like zero deer. So we've talked about like, if we ever went in there for mule deer, you know, those deer are still in that canyon. They're just going to be higher up there more than likely.
Yeah.
So it definitely would work for sure. If you, and we kind of talked about that before we hit record, is there's some areas I kind of want to go into, even if I don't see a bear, if I see one, great, but just so I can look for deer, like deer density, deer sign, elk sign while I'm in there spring bear hunting. And then hopefully I can use that information in the fall when I am in there trying to fill those tags. So. Yeah. We'll see what happens. I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet, but I might end up doing that just to do some early inventory checking.
Yeah. No, and I think that's super smart, man. I mean, you know, yeah, they might change drainages when they get to the top or something, but it at least gives you an idea. Like they have to go somewhere. They're not just going to turn and walk 40 miles from there, you know, in one direction. At that point,
yeah. They're
kind of, you know, they don't, you know, in certain areas around here, but you know, like there's low elevation spots and super high elevation spots around where we hunt, and they're going to be higher up or somewhere in between. But when you find them in those lower area spots on their way up, you're checking off boxes on where they're going to end up. They can only go so many, or they're only going to go so many places. And, you know, one, predators have a big thing to do with that. So, you know, I see, it's funny, like when you said the deer thing, it reminded me, I see in a canyon that I consistently bear hunt, I've seen the same 2 bulls for like the last 6 years, and they're always in the exact same spot, like on the exact same date, just feeding, and they're out there every single day. Like they'll be 30, 40 yards from the bears, just like looking at each other, and they'll both go back to feeding, you know. And I always think about it, like, I wonder where those bulls hang, you know, end up, because I'm sure they're huge. Like, they're growing at that point and everything. Like, I'm sure they're big-bodied bulls. So I always wonder where they end up, because that's a big, long drainage that goes way back, you know. So that's a little harder, but the bottom of that drainage is also low elevation the whole time. So I feel like they're pretty close to where they want to be, you know.
Yeah.
I've always wondered where they end up. But, you know, guys can use that sort of thing. And, I mean, you know, it's just one, you know. When you're finding mature animals, it's just checking off boxes. Like, and most of the time you check off boxes that it didn't work. And then at some point it works. Like, I have a hard time, and we were talking about it before we started, but, you know, until Idaho doesn't give me a tag every year and lets me hunt these over the counter units, it's easy for me to go into areas that I've been. And it's weird, because, and my wife yells at me for this, but I end up going like somewhere new every single year. And then I'll revert back, like, if I can't find what I'm looking for. But like, I have some archery elk spots that are unreal, like absolutely unreal. And, but I'll still go like somewhere new, you know. And then this year, I don't know, you know, Dennis from Initial Ascent?
Yeah. Yep.
Me and Dennis went on an absolute death march to nowhere. And we saw like one bull in 5 days, the first 5 days of the season, you know, and it was like hot and miserable and no shade. It was terrible. But I just wanted to try something new. And then when we went back into where I would normally hunt, or one of the spots I'd normally hunt, like, there was elk everywhere, you know, and he was like, kind of like, well, why weren't we here the whole time? And in my head, I was like, well, like, I like that. But at the same time, I like to just go somewhere new, because you have no idea when that spot's going to be like, okay, this is the best spot I've ever hunted in my life, you know? So,
yeah, that's probably how you found the spot that was loaded, was just from being willing to move around. And there's something about, you know, me, I hunt a lot all over the place, because I, you know, I'm non-resident to obviously every other state that I live in, but I live in Washington. So I'm always traveling out of state to hunt. And, it can be frustrating to learn a new area every year, but it's also really exciting. And I enjoy that as well, just to go into new country and see what you can find. So I don't blame you there at all.
Yeah. You just never know like what it's going to hold, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about your elk tactics a little bit. I know you kill a lot of big mule deer, but you also seem to kill a lot of really nice branch bulls as well. So I'm curious, like, archery hunting elk, are you kind of like more of a caller, more of a spot and stalk, or kind of adapt to the situation? You just kind of do whatever your gut tells you to do, when you find elk. And, you know, what, obviously north facing slopes, everybody talks about that, but are there any other like tactics that you find yourself kind of leaning on that have helped you find more success in these later years?
You know, when I used to live in a different part of the state, like, I would do, the elk moved a lot more than they do here. And so I would do a lot of like road bugling and stuff. Where I live in the unit that I hunt, that's not like an option. You have to do like boot bugling. Like, you have to, if you want to find the elk, you have to go out and figure out where they are. They move, but it's more like consistent around here, I noticed, unless the wolves get into them. The problem with where I used to hunt was the wolves would always get into them, and then you'd have just little bits of elk all over the place. And then they wouldn't bugle as much, you know. Elk that are pressured by wolves, I don't care what anyone says, they don't bugle as much as wolves. They're, you know, there's areas that you'll find elk that scream because the wolves don't go into those areas or whatever. That being said, now, my preferred thing is, like, I always almost always say this, and it's 100% never true, but I always say, like, if I kill an elk, I want it to be screaming, pissing all over itself, wanting to kill me. Now, there's not always true, right? Like, there's definitely certain situations where I think I can slip in and kill a bull, or, you know, 90% of the time I'm the caller. I'm totally happy not being the guy with the bow in my hand or being the backup, you know, like calling for my wife or, you know, I consider myself a pretty good caller. So generally I end up just being the guy that has a bugle tube in my hand and I'm like, hey, you go down, do this. I'm going to do this. Like I'm kind of I wouldn't say control freak. I don't know how to put it, but like, I just like to hop into a situation and be like, hey, this is what he's going to do. This is what we're going to do. And even if I'm wrong. And so I like to call in elk. Now when it comes to herd bulls and stuff like that, that's not the way to kill them. Like keeping them talking, somebody slipping back and keeping a bull talking if he'll talk to you is a good way to do it. Seeing them bed down and sneak into that, you know, grove or trees or whatever and sneak in is a good way to kill like really big bulls. You can kill nice 6 points calling. You can kill every once in a while, you can kill a herd bull calling. I like to call because for me, it's just like, it's going into a situation and like beating an animal at their own game, you know? Like, I think I'll shoot an elk over a wallow. Like if a giant 6x6 comes in and I'm sitting on a wallow eating a sandwich in the middle of the day, I will smoke that bull without even thinking twice. But my preferred method is to call a bull in. And I think like, if you're talking in terms of size, the best chance that you have to kill a big bull is the first few days of the season when they don't have cows yet. And to just kind of chirp them in, maybe like a light, like I'm a really young bull bugling, you know, and I'm hassling these cows and they're, you know, not talking to a bull, but hey, kind of saying, hey, get away from me or whatever, you know, and keep, you know, that's a really good way to call in elk. And, you know, there's a million things out there. I think you can still do elk 101, I'm trying to think of Taylor Tibbetts. Scott Game Tech has an app that you can go and learn all that kind of stuff. But if you're going to call, the biggest mistake that I see is people that do the same thing over and over and over again, and they don't know what they're saying. You know, they don't know what they're trying to communicate to the elk. They don't know when to be aggressive. They don't know when to, like, I call in a lot of elk. If I think a bull is coming and I think he might hang up or something, or if it's a bull that's already done it to me, I'll do a roundup bugle and I will start marching up the hill like I'm pushing my cows up the hill and breaking everything the whole time. And that bull will run you down if he thinks you're trying to run away from him and he thinks he can take you. Just stuff like that, that people don't, you know, a lot of the times people get hung up in this spot, but I'll leave the person, you know, down there, whoever is trying to ambush the elk, but I'll let them know like, hey, I'm going up, you stay here, and I will start chasing my cows up the hill and get that bull to commit to like, oh, okay, this bull's, he doesn't, you know, it's not a person, he's leaving, you know, just stuff like that, that most people don't do. And I think with elk, you just have to play on their emotions. You have to know what you're saying to them. If you don't know what you're saying and you're just bugling every time, like the one bugle you learned how to do, it'll work like on an elk that's really horned up or something, you know, but you have to, every situation's the same. And I'll go back to saying the exact same thing I said about deer. You can't romanticize it. It's never going to be like the exact way that you dreamt about it for the other 11 months of the year. You know, you have to listen to what that bull's saying and come up with the right negotiation to get him to come in. You can't just be like, oh, I know, because this is how I want it to work. I want every bull to come in screaming, like I said, pissing on itself. And it happened, you know, but most of the time, I don't know if you find this too, but I just find that if I'm willing to like sit there, cool, calm, and collected and be like, no, like he, you know, he doesn't want anything to do with me. How can I change that? You know, like, or like, you know, you rip a hardcore bugle and he's just like, whoa. Like, you know, that bull is just letting you know that he's there. How do you get
him
in? And I think probably where most guys go wrong is they think just because they got a response that that bull is ready to fight. And, you know, these things are out there every day. So their patience level and they're not in a hurry like you are. We're all in a hurry when we're out there to kill the elk and everything. Someday it's an all day play. Sometimes it's like more than a day play to kill a big bull, you know, or to even
eat
a branch bull that's been pushed around a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I would say too, on like, just to touch on, I'm going to talk about a story from this season. I hunted Montana and I talked to you a little bit over text during that hunt. We hunted our butts off, man. The first half of that hunt was brutal. We just, the elk weren't talking. We were seeing bulls glassing. I personally like to call elk just because that's what I enjoy. But as I've gotten older, you see all these guys kill mature bulls, like not calling, right? Like they'll sit there for days and slip in and shoot one. But personally, I love the back and forth with a bull. It's just like, there's nothing better than that. It's such a fun experience. But I know for a fact, the bull that I ended up killing finally in Montana, I wouldn't have killed years prior because of the patience that it took to kill that bull. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, like, that day it was super windy and we got that bull to answer the first bugle we had, the first response we got in, like, I think it was like day six, we finally got a bull to answer. And it was like 10 o'clock in the morning, super windy. We were on a ridge, bugled off the ridge. He answered on the other side. We dropped down. Wind was blowing like crazy. So we ended up just like taking a 5-hour break, just sat in the bottom of that drainage. And I was checking my Garmin inReach and it said at like 5 o'clock, the wind was gonna die down. So we just sat there till like 5 o'clock. And sure enough, the wind actually died down. The forecast was right. Got up and called pretty much from the bottom of that drainage. Nothing answered. I'm like, dang it. Like they moved. So we start hiking. We end up going like probably 3/4 of a mile or so, side hilling through a couple of drainages. And we finally get an answer again. We drop in and get set up on this bull. And Joseph is probably, I don't know, 30 or 40 yards behind me calling. And in the past, I would have been super aggressive, like almost like forced it, right? Like, you know, we called 3 or 4 times and I'm starting to ask myself, like, why isn't this bull coming in? Like, he's not interested. And I would have pushed in too fast and probably blew him out, like I've done several times in the past. But Joseph was doing his thing and I was just sitting there, and every time the bull would bugle, I would creep forward like just 1 or 2 steps, look at the ground, make sure there was nothing in front of me. If there was, I'd move it with my feet and just take like 1 or 2 steps. And I would just sit there. Joseph would bugle, and then a few seconds or whatever would go by, the bull would answer. I'd slip in a few more steps. And I probably creeped forward like 20 or 30 yards over several minutes. And finally, I caught the bull raking a tree, like just going to town on this tree. So like, he was interested, but he wasn't like super, super fired up. You know, like he didn't just come running in. And Joseph continues to call and that bull continues to answer and rake and rake. And I finally got to the point where like I can almost draw and shoot the bull, but he's raking that tree, so I don't have a clear shot to his vitals. And then finally the bull takes 2 steps forward and into that window, and I was able to stop him, shoot him at 30 yards and tipped him over. But in the past I would have just, yeah, thank you. But, in the past, I would have just like tried to force it, like you were saying, like romanticize it, like, you know, that's not how this is supposed to happen. I'm supposed to call once or twice and he's supposed to just come running right in. And for so many years prior to last year, we've blown out so many elk that we probably could have killed because we just didn't let the situation come to us. We tried to force it. And I was really, really proud of killing that bull because of how it happened. You know what I mean? Like the years of experience, I felt like finally kind of starting to pay off. That makes sense.
One thing that you said early on in that was like, I'd call 3 or 4 times and the bull wouldn't respond. And I'd be like, why isn't this bull responding? Why isn't he coming in, type of a deal? Have you ever watched, like, most of the videos you've watched that aren't in Eccles Park or something, when a bull is when a bull is like close to the hunter, you know, and they have no idea that the hunter's there and they're looking for the elk or whatever that's calling to them. How many times do you see a bull walking and bugling?
Not really ever.
Ever, right? They always stop, and then they'll be sitting there for like a minute and they let off a bugle. And then, you know, then they'll start walking in. Notice, like, when you watch elk hunting films from now on, something that I just feel like not a lot of people key up on is that if you're sitting there at 25 yards from a bull and it walks up and stops and you have no shot and you're both just sitting there staring at each other, but he can't see you, obviously, and he bugles after sitting there for a minute and you both just sit there quietly, 90% of the time, if you have good wind, that bull will continue to come.
Yeah.
Because, like, and a lot of the times when a bull will bugle, and again, this is depending on what you're trying to say to the bull. Like, if I have a bull that I think's fired up and he bugles, like, I'm gonna bugle right over the top of him. But if it's just like he's kind of coming in to check out the situation and he bugles, like, I'm not gonna like. There's a couple things you could do. You could either try and fire him up and like have your cows talk to him a little bit, like, hey, yeah, come up here, you know, and the bull get mad at the cows, or you can just not respond. Because if that bull is, if you think he's coming up and he's gaining ground and you keep talking to your cows every once in a while and he responds to you and he's getting closer, you don't need to do anything else. He's going to walk up there slowly, stop, listen, and get closer and closer to where you are, because he wants to know who you are. Now, there's certain guys that think, or not that think, but that say elk know each other off sight and sound and everything. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I think a lot of the times elk get confused where they're like, who the heck is this bull? You know, like I was in a group all winter with 30 bulls and summered with them or whatever, you know, I don't know who this guy is in our territory. And so they'll come just to look at you. Like, even if they don't want to fight or anything else and they think you have a hot cow, like, sometimes they'll just come because they just want to put eyes on you, like the curiosity thing. So, like, if that bull is bugling a lot, most of the time you have to remember he's not moving. So if he bugles and you bugle back and you get him to bugle back and you like, most of the time they're just sitting there bugling, you know? So a lot of the times the best thing you can do is if it's quiet and you're just listening, you know, raking, breaking branches, just sounding like elk, that's one of the best things that you can do, is because you can listen, you can control when you're breaking stuff, and you can listen to, and you can hear. Like, most of the time, if an elk is within 200 yards, like, you can hear a bull elk walking if the conditions are decent. So a lot of the times, like, I always tell people that it's learning not to overcall was a big thing for me. Now, in certain situations, I've been there with elk where it's like, I scream, he screams, I scream, and he's coming, you know, like he's pissed off and I'm, you know, talking to my cows. And when he talks back to me, I scream at him, you know, and like, that's fun. That's the romanticized part of it, you know. But a lot of the times, especially when the rut's not fully on, is just, you just need that elk to come to 60 yards to take a peek, you know, with your buddy 40 yards in front of you or whatever. And most of the time, that's all it takes. I don't know if it's been the same for you, but for me lately, I've just realized, like, I don't need that elk to come in screaming. I just need him to come and want to look at me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would totally agree. Like, if the wind is good and you know, the wind is good, if the elk isn't answering every bugle, he's moving in, he's coming in, but he's coming in slow. Like, I would say one out of 10 is the setup where the bull is so fired up that you cross paths with it, he comes in screaming. But most of the time, 90% of the time, you got to work that bull for quite a while, like, and be patient and let him kill himself, because his curiosity is going to get him. As long as you do have the wind, obviously, if you got good wind and he's quiet, more often than not, he's moving in. He's just taking like one or two steps at a time, looking left, looking right, looking in your direction, he'll stand still for a minute and then he'll take a few more steps towards you and do the same thing. And then he'll answer, he'll bugle or whatever. But it's not very common, at least in my experience, where they just run right in. You know what I mean? So yeah.
And
I've gotten older.
Go ahead.
Well, just as I've gotten older, I feel like you got to be more patient and let it happen and not try to force it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I 100% agree. I don't know, maybe the last 5 years, like I used to like chase after elk and stuff, you know, and that sometimes would work too, you know, like I just like being the satellite bull that's pressuring the thing. But I'd say most people archery elk hunting, I mean, the success rate's like, I don't know, 5 or 10%, you know, and that's cows and stuff too. So I think most people would be totally stoked to shoot a branch antler with their bow every couple years. And I really like, if you listen to people that are smarter than you, it's just not that hard to do. I ended up running into this old guy in the middle of nowhere, and he was like probably 70 something years old. And this guy was like, I was like, what are you doing? Like, I thought he was a ghost. Cause in this canyon, I'm dying, you know, I'm dying in this canyon. And I get up there and there's this guy up there. He has like one of those old, like JanSport type hunting backpacks on, you know, old bugle tube or whatever. And he was like, there's a bull down here that answered at first light. And he said, and he knew, he said, he doesn't have any cows and I'm going to call him up on this ridge so I don't have to pack him out from down there and shoot him. And I was like, you need help or whatever? And he was like, ah, you can stand behind me and break some sticks like that if you want or whatever. And I was like, okay. Cause he had been waiting there for like 3 hours for this play. And so he starts cow calling and stuff and talking. I don't know if you do this, but talking specifically to his cows as a bull, like, you know, and like pushing them around. And like, I do a lot of where I'm like breathing through my bugle tube and stuff, you know? And this guy was doing that and just talking to his cows, and the bull would bugle, you know, wouldn't pay attention to it because the bull, he's the bull and I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to my cows. And so, you know, the cows would, you know, be a little excited. You know, he's like, he's creating this whole situation where this bull has cows. It's, you know, the middle of the day and they're up and excited probably because one of them's coming into estrus or whatever. And so we're on this north slope and he's, you know, pushing his elk around and we're breaking stuff, being super loud and everything because elk are loud. And he calls this bull that was probably like 800 yards down in this canyon. You could barely hear him. And the next, like, I don't know, an hour later, he's maybe 400 yards away. Like, he's coming real slow, you know, but he's coming. And then we were up on this ridge and he just kept doing the same thing. And then when that bull was maybe 200 yards away, he did a roundup bugle and pushed his cows up over the top of that ridge. And then he walked back over the ridge, maybe 40 yards and just sat there, didn't make another word. And that bull just comes right up in front. I'm behind him 30 yards sitting against a tree. And that bull came right in front of him at maybe 6 feet. And he shot that bull, blew right through both sides of it. It ran like 10 feet. He cow called, it ran like 10 feet, turned around, was looking his direction, trying to figure out what was going on, and just fell over backwards right there on the side of the hill. And I'll just never forget being like, I asked the guy, I was like, how many elk have you killed? And he was like, a lot. And I was like, this is an old time guy. Like, you have to remember that guy, if he was like in his 70s, he was around like when they started making calls. And so this guy's gone through this whole progression, you know, where he was the most patient man I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, cause me, I would have been like, oh, I'm going to get closer maybe or whatever. And then pretend like, you know, do a similar type thing. But he pulled that bull cause he didn't want to pack it up all the way up that hill. It was like one of the most impressive things that I've ever seen elk hunting.
That's awesome, man. That's something you'll never forget, I'm sure.
No, and I think about it. I literally think about it all the time. The guy's name was James, and I was like, if James can do it, like, You know, anyone can do it. It's just, it, you just have to pique his interest. But he knew so much about elk, he knew that he knew he didn't have cows. Like, he just, that guy was smarter in the elk woods than I'll probably ever be. But that's the thing is, like, you know, YouTube can be such a double-edged sword because you can get like lost in it and spend too much time and, you know, blah, blah. But there's a lot of people that you can watch that are really good elk hunters. And if you pay attention to what they're doing, like if you watch Corey Jacobson, you know, that guy, it doesn't always work out or whatever, but he always has a plan and he always knows how he wants to execute the plan. It's never the same thing. His bugles are never exactly the same. Maybe if he's trying to locate or something, but he knows, that's one guy that if you watch him, he knows how to talk to elk. Like he knows what he's saying to an elk and he knows what kind of response he's looking for and everything else. I mean, that guy, you know, I mean, it doesn't help or it doesn't hurt. He's like a 27,000 time world champion elk caller. But like, if you watch guys like that, they know what he, it's not just that he's a great caller. It's that he knows what he wants to say to the elk to get him to come.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being a great caller doesn't necessarily correlate to being able to kill elk. I know a lot of guys that sound really good, but they're not the greatest elk hunters, to be honest. Like they fill a tag like once every 5-6 years. Right. And they're not being picky. You know what I'm saying? But, speaking of Corey, like I remember watching one of his YouTube videos years ago. And in the beginning of the video, he's like, there's a bull up here, like 3 miles. Like he's been up there for like every day. He answers from the road. And he's like, I'm going to go up this way. I'm going to get on this ridge. I'm going to circle around. And I'm going to call this bull in like right in this specific spot. And like, sure as shit, like half a day later, he's up on that ridge and he calls that bull in that same, in a specific spot, like exactly what he said he was going to do. It happened. He missed that bull, unfortunately, but exactly what he said he was going to do, he did it. And it was, that was super impressive. Like, he had a perfect plan. He knew where he needed to go. He knew how he needed to approach the elk based off the wind, where that elk was going to be bedded at that time of the day, where to slip into and set up. And as soon as he did it, it all came together. I'm like, that's a whole nother level of skill that he has from years and years of failure. I'm sure he's an older guy now, but it's just I don't know. It's just insane to see people like that have that much knowledge out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had a video that I watched years ago and he's talking, I don't know if it was like on the Elk 101 or what it was, but he's talking about an experience he had. And I think, I want to say he was in Arizona, but don't quote me. And at this time, I think he was already a world champion elk caller and he's hunting with his dad and he's like struggling to pull these bulls in and everything else. And he asked his dad, like, what am I doing or whatever, you know? And his dad was like, well, what are you trying to say to the elk? And that's like, that phrase is always stuck in my head because like you said, you can be the greatest elk caller in the world, but if you decide to challenge bugle an elk and you can't get through your elk bugle or you're through your tube, hey, fuck you. Don't come up here. You're not going to challenge bugle that elk. Like there has to be this emotion in it when you do it or else. Like you can rip a challenge bugle, but there's a difference when you hear guys do it in the woods. Like when you, if you've ever been right in before a fight, I don't know if you ever have like in the elk woods, like a real elk fight.
No.
When a bull challenge bugles at another bull, it's like, it's something you can like feel in your chest where it's like you're in a bar and some dude like steps up to another dude and you feel like, oh, something's about to happen right now. It's the same feeling. Like you can hear it. You could hear that bugle just to close the door to your truck. And if you heard that bugle, you'd be like, what the hell? Cause it's not like a, hey, I have some girls. Hey, I have some girls over here. Hey, yeah, stay over. No, it's like, I'm going to kill you. Like that's what it sounds like through, you know, in elk language, if you will.
And yeah.
So being able to carry that emotion or, you know, even as a cow, like when your bull's talking to you and you're talking to the bull that's bugling, just stuff like that. Like if you can get that across to those elk, I think that's huge. Cause I'm, like I said, I'm a pretty good caller, but I'm not like, a Cody McCarthy or a Corey Jacobson. Not even those guys are on a whole different level, but I feel like I'm decent at being like, this is what I'm trying to tell them. And I can normally make that work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not so good at knowing what I'm going to tell them. I don't think I have like that much knowledge about it, but I did want to ask you, and I think I know the answer already, but do you mix in a lot of like cow chirps with your, when you're out there trying to locate bulls, or when you do have a bull located? Or I know there's a lot of guys out there that believe that cow calling is like a really horrible idea. And there's other guys that say the complete opposite. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
When cows are talking, like if you've ever been in an area where there's a lot of elk and cows are talking, they do like the majority of what you're going to hear. And yeah, I always, even early on in the season, and it can change. Like if I'm not getting, or like, I'll just tell you what I do first. Normally I'll do, and this is, I'm pretty sure straight out of Corey's book, but I'll do some soft cow calls. Like if I don't think the elk are right there, let's say I'm road bugling and I think they're going to be down, you know, a couple hundred yards, I'll do a couple soft cow calls and a couple more mature cow calls through my bugle tube. And then I'll wait like a minute or two, because those elk, if they can hear you, if they can hear a bugle like right there, they could probably hear you cow call through your bugle tube. And I'll wait, because sometimes I'll get a response immediately. And that can tell me a couple of things. Like I don't need to pretend like I have a bull with me. If that yep. bull, depending on what he says to me, that bull's interested, he'll come to cow calls. I don't need to pretend like I'm a bull and create some fight scene. Again, I would love that, but that's not always what the elk wants. If the elk thinks he's going to get a free girl, then
yeah.
that might be easier for him. And he might come in with just a lot quicker, you know? The other thing is if I don't get a response in like 1 to 2 minutes, then I'll just let out. Either I'll say something to my cows, you know, or I'll just do like a location bugle. And a lot of the times that can work, like a location bugle can work or not work depending on the situation. A lot of it to me depends on, if there's a lot of elk in the canyon, you're going to get one of them to respond always, probably with a location bugle. But if they already know who's in the canyon and all of a sudden you're right in the middle of a canyon and you do a location bugle, I don't think that's the smartest thing, because they're like, where have you been? Like we've yeah. been talking this whole time, you know, why, you know? So if you're coming into a canyon, so like if you're using Onyx or whatever GoHunt or whatever mapping unit you use, some of the best places that you can road bugle is when you're entering into a canyon. Like let's say the canyon comes in like this and comes to a head at my chest. When you came in over here, this is one of the best places to locate bugle from, because if you were an elk, you'd actually be coming into that canyon for the first time. So you let out yeah. a couple of cow calls, you do a location bugle, and all of a sudden you're a new elk that just came in. They're probably going to respond and say, hey, we're over here. Hey, don't come over here. I'm over here. Or, you know, however they're going to respond to you, depending on what type of September it is.
Yeah.
And I think you can do it without the cow calls in certain areas. Like if you are in an area and you think you've seen it with your eyes, like glassing, there's no cows with bulls right now. Like it's the first August 30th or whatever. It's hot. I've been glassing for 2 days and I haven't seen one. I've seen bulls. I haven't seen one with a cow. That's the time that you'd maybe just want to bugle. You can still get them to come into cow calls to check you out for sure. But you could just bugle if you're just trying to be like, hey, I just want to get a pinpoint on this guy so I can go in and try and stalk in and hunt him. Like smart hunters do, like and stuff like that do that. You know, they're really good at finding an elk and just being like, I think he's right here, and stalking in there and killing giant bulls, you know. I'm not as good at that. But I would generally like to be like, hey, we're some cows over here talking, you know, maybe you should come check us out. But Yeah, I think it's all situational, but you just have to think of, like, I said this, I don't know if it was about elk or mule deer earlier, but they're out there every day. Like, and if they're in this canyon fighting over girls, they're doing it every day. So if you do know there's a herd bull in that canyon that has 20 cows and there's 4 or 5 satellites and he's keeping them off for the most part, one of the best things that you can do is pretend to be another herd bull that has cows, because they might not think that they can beat you or whatever. That's a good time to sound like, I am a pretty good bull or whatever, you know, and I have, and you're making tons of cow noises, making tons of noise, because they'll probably come check you out. One or two of those satellites is going to come over and see what you are to see if they can take you to take your cows. And yeah, a lot of guys will sound like a wimpy bull. I don't necessarily like to do that unless I just am imitating a couple of cows.
Yeah.
If there's a herd bull that's getting pushed around in a canyon and, you know, he's fighting off, you know, a couple of bulls a day or whatever, and you slide into that canyon at the same time, hey, I'm another herd bull with cows, and these bulls haven't been able to take on this bull, they're going to come check you out to see if you're something they can take on. So it's all just situational. Like, when the rut's on, that's one of the best things you can do is pretend to be a herd bull with cows. Especially if you're fine shooting, you know, a branch antler bull or a smaller six or something, you know, that's, which I am. When it comes to bow hunting, like, I'm perfectly fine shooting a smaller 6-point or something, because it's the experience for me of calling a man and everything. But yeah, it's just, you could talk for hours about this because it's all situational. And the more situations you put yourself in, the more you're going to know what to do the next time. And it's great to take all these courses. Like I mentioned, Elk 101 and Got Game Tech has, you know, the Elk Nut app or something. And they all have different takes on it because they're built by different people, you know, that have had different experiences. Yeah. And I think for me, like, I've dialed in my kind of way of hunting, you know, but if I hunted with Corey, he'd probably think I was retarded. You know, I mean, we're not going to be like on the same wavelength, you know, but don't be afraid to learn from other people, you know, learn from some 75-year-old guy on the side of the mountain. He might not be crazy. You know, he might not be a ghost. He might teach you something that you'll never forget, because there's guys out there. And don't be afraid. One thing I would say is don't be afraid to link up with guys on the side of the hill. Like, I, all the time you meet up, like, and there's like two solo hunters and you come together and they're just like, oh, well, I'm going to go this way and I'm going to go that way. It's like, how about, hey, man, my name's Justin. What's your name? Yeah, well, you heard that bull too. Yeah, yeah. You want to go try and kill him together? Like, some great friendships are made that way. Like, I've met a lot of hunting partners that way. And it's also, it's a lot easier to kill elk with two people than it is with one person. Like, I've called in a lot of elk to myself, but it's way tougher. Like, you're bugling, trying to move forward, you know, 40 or 50 yards without an elk seeing you. Like, you know,
guys, yeah, not making too much noise.
Yeah, guys running, because I want there to be noise up there, but I don't want it to be down here, because they pinpoint,
right?
They pinpoint that noise. But I think it's a big mistake guys make when they run into guys in the backcountry. And even if there's two of you and two of you, like, you can have two shooters and two callers, and like, you can do some damage that way when you meet guys back there.
That's a good point. Bad,
you can, you know, and you can use each other. Like, hey, we kill the bull and, you know, make a pact. Like, whoever runs into elk first, if we kill one, we'll let you know or whatever. And, oh, hey, the elk are all in this canyon over here. And you build relationships, because it's not like you want to tell everyone about your hunting spot. We ran into each other, or I'd have never been like, hey, come hunt here. But now, like, we've become good friends where it's like, oh, yeah, well, did you check out this canyon? Oh, like when you were elk hunting and I'm like, well, did you check it out here? Did you check it out there? You know, and then you left and I saw elk like right where you had been glassing from, and then you guys ended up killing those bulls. Like, there's nothing, it didn't hurt me in any way to help you out that way. And if you had gone across the drainage and glassed up some big buck, I know you'd have been like, hey dude, there's a big buck below you. Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't, you know, you shouldn't tell everyone about your hunting spots, but it doesn't hurt to just, you know, help each other out when it's you know, mutually beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are a perfect example of that. I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't able to find you a buck of the caliber you were looking for, but I know I was definitely trying, and I was sending you videos of bucks, you know, that I thought you might be interested in. I saw several bucks I knew you wouldn't shoot, but I know a lot of other guys would have shot them in a heartbeat. But yeah, I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with it. I've really never thought about it like that, but now that you say it, it definitely resonates for sure. And, you know, back to that cow calling thing, it's just interesting because I've personally had a lot of success cow calling through my bugle tube and having bulls, multiple bulls come in that way.
Yeah.
But I've heard a lot of guys that are like well known in the hunting space on social media, like talk about like, don't cow call at all. And yeah, I was just interested in your, you know, perspective on that, because I personally believe it works. And it's definitely situational, but like, I can go back to Montana, not last year, but 2 years prior, we were bugling a lot the first 4 or 5 days and having like little to no luck. And I ended up switching to like just cow calling through my bugle tube. And I started calling in like 4 or 5 bulls a day. Like, yeah. Some bulls came in like running like a Clydesdale. Like, you could hear them trotting through the timber, breaking shit all around them. They didn't make any noise with their mouths, but they were so amped up to those cow calls. You knew they were coming. Like, it was insane. So,
well, here's like the thing is, are you like, you have to know where you're hunting. Like, if you're hunting in an area that's got,
it was wolves, a lot of wolves in this area.
If you have 40 bulls to, you know, 60 and there's 60 cows like per 100 or whatever, well, yeah, like there's going to be way more bulls that, you know, but if there's only 5 bulls per and, you know, 95 cows, well then, you know, you're going to have to hunt it a little differently. Like, because there's way more cows. But I think anyone that says, oh, you should never cow call, and you hear the same thing on the other side, you should never bugle. It's like, no. There's a situation that calls for the most random things, you know? And, it's not, you shouldn't be doing stupid stuff or whatever. But at the same time, I've seen some like crazy, like, you know, I love my wife. She's not the greatest with a diaphragm call. And she called in a bull this year to like 5 feet. And if I had heard her cow calling, I would have thought something was dying on the side of the hill. She called that bull into like 5 feet, you know, I mean, it was amazing. Like, if you see the video, it's absolutely, I think she posted it to her Instagram. She calls it into like, I mean, poking distance, you know? And so there's certain times of the season too, that they just,
anything will work.
Yeah. Like, you could, you can rake,
but that's like one day
they'll come running.
Yeah. That seems to be like one day out of your hunt though, where it's just like everything aligns and like almost anything you do will work. Other than that, like, I feel like you just have to adapt to the situation and not be afraid to try different things and just mix it up. Like, I think the biggest mistake guys make is like you said early on, the romanticize, like, it has to happen this way or it's not going to happen. Like, if that's your mindset, you're probably not going to film any tags. Like, you got to be willing to mix it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You have to change what you're doing if it's not working. Like, the simplest advice that you could give to anyone, and it doesn't matter if it's bear, mule deer, elk, like, especially if you're elk hunting and you think there's elk around and whatever you're doing is not working, then like, flip the table and do the exact opposite of what you're doing. Like, there's something going on, and when you figure it out, it'll make a lot of sense. Like, I was hunting a few years ago and there was a wolf pack in the drainage and I had no idea. It was the only time I've almost killed a wolf with my bow, and the elk weren't talking at all. So I started just still hunting through the timber and I almost killed like several decent bulls, you know, that were just, I just kept bumping them, didn't know they were there or whatever. And I was just moving slow through areas where I knew, like, in my head that they would be bedded on these benches on north slopes and stuff. And I kept getting close, but couldn't get them. And then I bumped a bull and started cow calling and he was gone, you know, but I like cow called for a while. Cause my thought process wasn't, oh, I'm going to call him back in. It was that I wanted to calm anything else down that was right there, you know, so I could continue my hunt. And like, all of a sudden there was this gray flash at like 40 yards, you know, and then another one and stuff. And then all of a sudden, like, there was these wolves just like flying like by me, you know, like looking for this elk that was talking. Well, now I know, like, I could have done anything in that canyon and those elk weren't going to respond because the wolves were deep in that canyon. And, you know, a lot of them were probably getting pushed out and everything, or some of the smarter ones were sitting in certain spots waiting for the wolves to leave. But, like, you know, there's always an answer for why they're doing what they're doing. Like I said, they're out there all the time. We're just out there for a week or whatever, you know. So you just have to, you know, humans are the deadliest predator because we have this, you know, and you just have to use this. You can't be emotional when you're out there. You have to just accept the circumstances that you're under and try to move forward with it.
Totally. Well, damn, man, I've had you on for quite a while. I know it's getting late and we could probably talk for hours about this stuff. So I think we better end it before we're on here for 3 hours.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a blast, man. Definitely got to do it again. Maybe before season or after season, or if you're bored, or just hit me up. We'll definitely hop on and chat about something.
Awesome.
All right. Well, let the audience know where they can find you on YouTube. You've got some cool videos out from last year. That wolf and deer hunt one was awesome.
Yeah, ours is just small outdoors on YouTube.
On YouTube. Yeah. Cool. And then on Instagram, where can they find you if they have been sleeping under a rock and they don't know who you are yet?
Probably most of them. It's just justin.small.outdoors.
Cool, man. Well, tell the wife hello for me. It's always a pleasure chatting with you guys, and we'll have to do it again soon.
All right, man.